Good evening, humans. Today I bring you Carsten Becker, who last year gave a crash course here on FPGAs and figured out that that's actually pretty hard to explain to people and put in the work to make it easier. Enjoy.
My name is Carsten. I forgot an introduction slide, but my name is Carsten. I'm a part-time scientist working on a mission to the moon, and I'm also a PhD candidate at the TU Hamburg, and as such, I'm researching on FPGA architectures. And one of the things that annoyed me the most when I was starting to work with FPGA architectures is that there is no proper input language. This is what I claim here. I basically say that VHDL and Verilog, which are the two most common languages which are used for programming FPGAs, are very hard to learn. Or just a quick quote, who of you has ever programmed an FPGA? And that's good. Who of you really enjoys programming in VHDL?
Hey,
who of you enjoys programming in Verilog? Hey, there's one guy. Okay, two. I guess you kind of all agree that VHDL and Verilog are not the best languages for programming FPGAs, or in my opinion. Also, the tools are very hard to use. They are confusing, to be more precise. They are, you know, it looks like a space shuttle cockpit, and it should not look like this. It should be much simpler. And so what I want to do is I want to bring the simplicity of Arduino to the world of FPGAs. And I developed quite a bit that I want to show you today. So the primary goal that I had, I invented a language that I call PSHDL, which stands for Plain Simple Hardware Description Language. So it's really aimed at people that know C, so that they can read and understand what it's doing, but it has the semantics of VHDL and Verilog, but you know, without the fucking ugliness that the other languages bring with them. So I wanted to have a zero installation. People should be able to get started in like no time, which is like the exact opposite of all the people that were at my workshop like yesterday, that they downloaded a 6 gigabyte file for Xilinx, then they installed it, which took like 20 gigabyte hard disk space. And on the Linux machine, it almost works then. So this is not what I'm aiming for. I really want to have people to be able to, you know, download something, get started very quickly, and get a success very quickly. And it should be easy to learn. It should be user-friendly with error messages that are actually understandable by humans, which is a very hard thing to do. And PSHDL is not not quite there yet, but I think it's doing much better than what some of the VHDL and Verilog tools are doing. But it's important, while I'm going to show you that PSHDL is a new language, I don't want you to think about it as just a new language. It's really the foundation of building much simpler tools for programming FPGAs. It's an open source GPL3. Environment, and I want you to take a look at it. If you like it, you know, you can contribute to it. That would be very awesome. And I think that the possibilities that it opens up are very good, because it has, you don't need to hack into the source, but you can. There are several extension points where you can hook into. So I want to create a new collaborative community where people, you know, are like supporting each other with very nice tutorials to get started with programming FPGAs. So it may sound crazy to some of the people, you know, that coming from the EDA industry, that that you could actually use a browser as an integrated development IDE environment. But what I'm going to show you, I think, kind of fulfills that. It's very powerful from an editing perspective. It has error marking on save, and which is more than you can say for any other Xilinx tools. And it invites collaboration, because if you have a problem with some source code, you just point around the URL, and you can get help by whoever you send the address to. Hopefully he knows PSHDL, that would be very helpful. And so most of the time I will give a demo, because I think seeing is believing, and I hope it works. Yesterday it didn't work so well, but I hope today it goes better. So,
This is cool.
So what you're starting with is you have a workspace. I can make it a bit better. So you have a website. One more? Oh, that's very daring. It doesn't scale very well with UI, so at some point it might break and I have to go back. But so the first thing that that you are invited with is a tab where you can learn about PSHDL. It gives you a very quick introduction into the language and make some very simple stuff. And the next step that you want to do before you are going to create some code is you're going to create a workspace. The workspace is like the your container for the files that you are working on. And the email address, it doesn't really matter what you're entering here. It's just that, you know, in case my server goes up into smoke or I do something that is incompatible with your files, then I might notify you that your files might be lost or something. If you're not interested in that, then just enter whatever you want. I will not give it to the NSA or something. I can't spell my name very good. So now you have a workspace. And here you can, for example, create a new file. And you are greeted with an example. And this example is just, you know, adding. I can make it a bit more bigger, I guess. So, maybe one more. No. OK. So this, for example, is a very simple module, which is called my first module, and it contains a register, which is called sum, and it's an unsigned integer which has a width of 12 bits, and it has two inputs which are called A and B, and it's adding them. So yeah, you're going to save that as a file, and then you have a file. What's also interesting is you have some nice examples here where you can see how you modulate, for example, a ROM. You see, those things are, if you would see the VHDL code, I can actually show you the VHDL code, you know, then you see that this is really much shorter than anything that that you want to write in VHDL. So in this this button here, for example, I can generate VHDL code, which is what you want to put into your synthesis tools then. And so you see the VHDL code here. You know, this. Remember, this is like three lines in PSHDL, and it's 28 in VHDL. And it doesn't make the same mistakes that the students are doing that I have at my university, for example. You know, if you know VHDL, you know our Verilog is actually quite the same. There is a sensitivity list, and if you fuck that up, then the simulation is not the same as what you get on the hardware. And this is very confusing. And so when you're using PSHDL, this will not be an issue for you. And the ROM looks a bit different, like this. So you can download the files manually. You can download the files as a zip file. This is not too exciting yet. But what's very interesting about PSHDL is that you can actually compile it to another language, like C, Java, JavaScript. And what that means is that I can actually run a simulation in the browser. And so what I'm doing here is I'm generating Dart code, which is like something like JavaScript. But I hate JavaScript as much as I hate VHDL, so I use Dart for that. And why isn't showing up? That's not cool. Let's try this again. Ta-da! Doesn't work. Cool. man, this did work well yesterday. Okay, I will just use the browser version. So this is where you can find the website online. Right now, I call it the beta because it has some bugs up from time to time. It will be better in a minute, like this. Just do this again, and again. And so the way it works is generating the Dart code, and then on the server it is compiling the Dart code to JavaScript, which unfortunately takes like 3.5 seconds. There is not much I can do about that. But if you're using Dartium or Dart, then the time. Oh, I know what the problem is. Anyway, so here you have a simulation, and you can have some simple inputs, you know, like, for example, you know, this code was adding A and B, and obviously you have some inputs A and B here as well. And you can, you know, you can run it, and I can say, for example, 5, and I can say 6, and you see that the result is 11. And so, yeah, that is running in the browser. And if it's running, the fun thing about running in the browser is that if you're using Dartium, which is like the Dart version of Chrome, then it's actually just as fast as iSIM from Xilinx. So, also it has some funky. you can display LEDs. So let me do something. For example, I want to make a. Let me make a counter and let's blink some LEDs, because this is the first thing everyone does. And so what I'm saying here is I'm just instead of in VHDL you have like a process and you're saying if there is a rising edge then do this else do that and so on. And in PSHDL you just say this variable is going to be a register, which is clear, and there is also no way to describe a latch in VHDL. So those of you in PSHDL, sorry. So for those of you that are suffering from latches in your design, you don't have those in PSHDL. And let's make it a uint and call it 70 bit width, and let's say it's counter plus 1. So what I described here is basically a 17-bit unsigned integer that is a counter that is incremented every time there is a rising edge. If you don't like the rising edge, you can specify, like, I have to check the documentation. There's a documentation button by here. Okay. You can specify whatever you want. You can say clock edge equals falling. Like this, failing, yeah. But I don't like that too much. So the default register configuration is that you have a rising edge and a synchronous reset, and those signals are automatically added to your design. And then we create an LED, and we say counter, and we take the, this is a good browser, so we can take the 13th bit. If you're using Firefox, use 8. You can say the reset value, you mean. You could say reset value is 5, like this, but without the I button E. So we're taking the counter, and we convert it to Dart and JavaScript. And I really hope that you're not, you're not perfect. This is blinking very fast.
Can you see it?
Yes. So there you go, your blinking LED, you know, up in no time. And of course, you can compile it to VHDL, and you see your code here. It automatically generated the clock and reset input for you. And by default, it's listening on the rising edge, synchronous, active high, reset. And initializing to zero. So let me get back to my slides. Where are my slides there? So I hope that kind of convinced you that, except for the bugs, the browser is a very good idea. You can do simulation, and you can even add some own of your extensions. For example, something that I would be interested in is like have a custom visualization. Instead of having just a blinking LED, you have some other visualizations with like a CPU where you can see the registers in there and something like this. Because this is JavaScript, you can do like anything you want. But I also want to create a new hardware platform, because I think that if you're going to start a new with something, you need to have an FPGA where you can download data to, and it should be fun. You know, blinking LEDs are always fun, especially if they're RGB, and it should also be some kind of challenging. So what I created is this piece here. I'm going to hang it like here, and ta-da, blinking, hopefully. Is it? Yes. Wait, I need to reset. Like this. Wow, this is cool. No, I want to have this. So there you have your blinking LED. It's also making a good Christmas tree. So I wanted to have a really simple design, and this was the first one that was done by Boltport. He was making beautiful PCBs, but unfortunately it didn't work out because his software, he's using Inkscape for designing all the boards, and then it's compiling to Gerber with Python. So if you're interested in other ways of creating PCBs, then you should definitely take a look at it. But it doesn't support four layers, so we couldn't use it for the board. So this is basically the board that that we created. There are like four arms. And on these four arms, there is on each arm, there is like four RGB LEDs so that you can blink in all kind of different colors. And the funny thing is that you can actually stack two of those boards together in 45 degree angle. So you can vertically stack them. And you can horizontally stack them together to create kind of a network. So for example, you can have create simple games where you can, you push a button on one, and then it's traveling across the arms to the signal is traveling across the arms to other FPGA boards. Do something like this. So I wanted to really give the opportunity to have some fun with the board without doing actually something useful. Realized was this board by SMB Technology. That's a good friend of mine. And he put really a lot of effort into designing the board in a really short time. So I want to thank him here. And so the hardware platform, that's an Actel A3PN 250. You can read about it. It's programmed from an Xmega, which is quite of interesting. You have some space on there, so if you want to put some data to from the Xmega to the Actel, you can do that as well. And you have like 60 IOs that you can access from the headers, and there are like four ports, which you can see the four arms, and there is two vertical ports, and five IOs go to the Xmega. You can do SPI for from your PC to it, and you have some push buttons, and the default arm has like four RGB LEDs, and the pin has two connectors. And so the thing is, I want to sell it for like really cheap. So if you're interested in having something like this, it should be around 30 euros. And the more people I have, if I, we're 30x euros, and the more people are interested in it, the more I can make x go near zero. So, yeah. That would be really awesome if I could reach 29. This is what I wanted to say with it. Yeah. No. This is not all I want to show. Now you wrote your really nice program, and you obviously want to get it running on your FPGA. And the thing is that I'm using a Mac, and I'm not ashamed of it. But the it's not like any vendor actually supports Mac OS X with their tools, which I think is like really a shame. And so what I did is, you know, you can actually program your FPGA from the web UI. Like, how does that work? Okay, so the magic trick I'm pulling here is the tools are still running on some Windows or Linux server. So in the background, there's my Windows, and there is a tool called Local Helper, which is pulling all the modifications that you're doing, and the bug I had yesterday is fixed. It's pulling all the modifications from that you're doing to your workspace onto the local disk. And when I'm calling synthesis from the web interface, actually what it's doing is, the speaker before me forgot his phone. I will just move. He was called. Probably wasn't important. Was it you?
Yes.
Ah, there it is. Thanks for taking the time, because it takes a long time for the synthesis to run through. So what this is doing is you're compiling your code to VHDL, and the local helper is pulling down the VHDL files. It is then generating all the other files that it needs, like a project file and the pin constraint file, and then it is calling the synthesis tool, and once it is done with it, it uploads the resulting .dat file, in this case, back to the server, and then I need to stall some time. Yeah, unfortunately, this is working slower than it was in at home, because it's using some network. Ah, there it is. So you can look at the the output that it generated. You know what resources it took, and you can take a look at the log file if you're interested in that. You know, it looks like this. It says something strange, like encoding here. Blah. This is not very user friendly, and I have to find some ways to make some sense out of that, to really give back the errors that are generated during synthesis, which may occur because I cannot detect them. Because for example, if you do something useless and the tool figures it out, then it will optimize it away. And when it optimizes something away, then it will give you a warning, and yeah, and so on. So. And there is a second local helper. They have a really nice GUI for it already. Not really nice, but nice. This one knows that there is this board attached to devcu.usb modem. And what I can do here now, I can program it. I can start the program. I can tell it to download the actual configuration.dot file. Down to the FPGA, and there might be some change happening to the blinkings there. Maybe not. I forgot if I changed something, but we will see. What does the code actually say? Yeah, okay, it's did I change something? Oh no, it's the same program, so you won't see anything useful. Okay, this didn't make a difference, so let's let's.
It make
yeah, this is because the reset button is not working properly right now. La 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 la. Well, to my defense, I have to say that what I'm going to show you here is like really cutting edge, and by cutting edge, I mean I just finished it like last week and. Let's redo all the stuff again. But in the meantime, maybe I should do something else. Oh, it's just a minute. Oh, no, I can. No, I will continue with my presentation. And just wait a second. So you may think that, you know, PSHDL is like a really nice toy for the little kids. But it also has has some features that I think are really interesting for people that are doing serious work with this. So for example, if you're into image processing, then you always have the problem that you have to have big data that you want to run through your design to verify that it's working as expected. So let me just quickly, no, it's not. Let me, come on. Yeah, so, and what PSHDL allows you is that you can transform PSHDL to a language like C, C++, Java, and Dart. And you know, those are sequential languages, you know, and but PSHDL is a parallel language. So this is really fast, like really, really, really fast. I think you know, it's probably the fastest simulator that you can get right now on the market. It's also generating some platform neutral bytecode. So there is a virtual stack machine, and you can hook into that by creating an interpreter if you are into that. And also you can embed some domain-specific languages, which I think is a really cool thing. But before I continue here, this should be done, yeah. Okay, so let me reconfigure that. And yeah, so the way it works is you have your PSHDL code, and from that I'm deriving an HDL model, which is process-oriented, and so I can output VHDL code. So the PSHDL code and the VHDL code, they are like, they kind of look alike, but you know, the PSHDL does consume significantly less lines of code. And from that, I'm generating a sequential model, which you can then output to the bytecode and run it through an interpreter, or you can directly generate native code like Java, Dart, or whatever. No, wait, let me did it. Let's reset. Oh yeah, much smoother. So now it's, you know, I wanted to show you that, you know, I slowed down the speed and now it's fading across the colors much more smoothly. So yeah. Yeah, so how fast is the simulation? So notice that this is a logarithmic scale. Questasim is like the fastest HDL simulator that is commercially available. iSim, which is like the green one, is like the free tool that you're getting with Xilinx. And the dark blue bar that you can see is C code generated from PSHDL. And you can see that between Questasim and PSHDL, there is like two orders of magnitude in between. And between iSim and PSHDL, there are also three orders of magnitude. So I think this is pretty darn impressive. So the way it works and when you're doing VHDL simulation is like you're having your model. For example, you want to create an MP4 compression algorithm, and you have a reference implementation in C, and you're generating some data, and you feed that into your test bench, which then is executed by some tool like iSim, Questasim, or whatever, and you get some output data, and then you compare those two, and you hope that those are the same. But in PSHDL, you can actually embed your generated native code into your application. And let me give you a quick demo of that. So one of the examples that that I had was that, for example, I wanted to develop a camera IP core that is scaling down the image from a camera. Those are 2048 by 2048 pictures that are coming in via Ethernet. Right now there is no camera attached, so I use a still image. But those are 2048 by 2048 pixels. And I'm scaling those down by some time. What you could see here when I was checking dBuyer is that the PSHDL core was computing the downscaled version. And if you would run through iSim, then it would have taken like much longer. Like a few, like tens of seconds to scale this image. But in PSHDL, you can do it like instantaneous. But what's even more neat, I find, is, for example, the image looks a bit bright. So if I change some code here, then it recompiles the PSHDL code to Java code, loads it during the runtime, and updates the image with the new PSHDL code. And so you can finally you can start developing hardware like you are used to develop software by try and error. So this is really a significant speed up that you can achieve here, and I also think that it's quite nice to use. Another interesting feature. When I'm working on our rover, we have a board where there's a power PC embedded into the FPGA, and so we have always a problem that we need to attach some IP core to the CPU. And we need, for example, a modulator for the pulse width modulation of the motors. And we need to attach that to the CPU. And how this usually works is you are clicking and clicking and clicking and editing and clicking and editing. But in PSHDL, there is something much neater a much nicer way to do it. And this is by embedding another language. So in PSHDL, you can say, I want to define my own language. What you can see between the behind the generate PLB and before the closing bracket of it is a configuration language where I'm describing a memory layout, the one that you can see on the right, where you have like offset 0 in the memory you have like a register A0 and B0, and at offset 4 you have the result. And actually, the only lines that you care about are the three lines at the bottom, which is where your function is, because it's adding A plus B and putting it to result. And from a CPU perspective, you write your data to offset 0, and you read it back from 4. And what it does is it not just generates you all the infrastructure code that you need. There's an MPD file, a POA file, there's many files that are generated by it. And it's generating all of that for you. And it's generating your HTML file where you can see where your memory stuff is. And it's also generating you some C code. And the funny thing is, if you're using the C code, did I really put a demo in there? Oh boy. Oh, okay. I have to do that. I'm a bit afraid. I will do something different. This is hard. Okay. Let's take a look at the example. And here's the example that, no, this is not. Here's the example that I was showing you. Let me just remove that. Let's give it a name. And put this into full screen so that you can see something. And let's compile this. And what you can see is, it's generating. This is the VHDL code, by the way, that it generates. This is the bus decode logic that you need to access a register from a CPU in VHDL. And it goes on. It's like 165 lines of code. And that's not all. You need another VHDL file, which is like 422 lines as well. And it's also generating some strange files like the MPD file and the POA file. All those files you need to program actually the IP core into your design. And what PSHDL is also generating for you is those, what I just showed you, that the HTML file, where you can see where all the stuff is, and some helper methods where you can get header files for calling setInputDirect. And yeah, here you can set, for example, your A and B, and you can, with a get, you can read your result, and it's doing some validation whether you're accessing something that is not not within the range of what you specified, and it also generates you some accessing methods for it. Whew, okay, let's do this. let's take this. Let's go to the Arkley backdoor. No such workspace. That's okay. And compile it to C. I know why. There is a D point. So it generated the two files for me, the one that I was just showing to you, and it also generated a file that is called that I call the SIM encapsulation. And what this does, it's not working as expected. Okay, I will just download the results. And in the SIM encapsulation, you can actually run let's step back up first. So when you would do it ordinarily, you would have to I can cheat. If you do it ordinary, you would have to create a Xilinx Platform Studio project. In that project, you would have to need to import the IP core. After you imported that IP core, you can then synthesize it. You have to write some code, and so on. And all of this gets very annoying. And if you want to change something, it takes about 2 minutes before you can actually when you're changing some C code, and you want to see the change that it introduced in the processor, it takes about 2 minutes. And let me go like here. I prepared something. Simulation results and like this. So you have your C files, and there is a program which is test.c. It doesn't look very extraordinary. You can't zoom. Okay. Let me use Textastic. There it works. Yeah, better. So what I'm doing here is, if you would, usually you can, this fdiff-sem is actually just used because if you are running it on the FPGA, then there's a problem that when you're including printf, then the program doesn't fit into the block ROM, and your program won't run on the microplace. And if you put it into the DDR ROM, which is not simulated in the simulator, then it will not work at all. This is really ridiculously stupid stuff. I'm using the busaccess.h, which is the file for which I was showing before, where you can where you can access the registers by using those helper functions. And let me compile that. Let me see, what do we need? Bus access, we need, busprint.c, we need test.c, test adder, bassim.c, and let's see if it works. No. Ah, I need to specify. Okay, I need to, right. Just add bus.c. So this is now compiled the test.c that I was showing you. This is the test.c. And if I'm now running it, then you can see it's adding 5 plus 10 hexadecimal, and the result is 15 hexadecimal. And if I want to change that, you know, I just do something like this. Oh no, this was the wrong file. Yep. If I want to change it here, then I just recompile it and run an A, and you're getting the new result. And so this was simulating the whole IP core that we just created without having you to simulate the whole processor. But the program that we are using can still be used on the microplace or on the processor that is actually running on the FPGA. And so you're saving really a lot of time by doing this because this runs significantly faster. The turnaround time, as I said, between changing your C code and seeing it in the ISIM, the change would be like 2 minutes. And you could see it's here, it's just a matter of seconds. So that you can do try and error. Good. So, so that is basically all that I wanted to show to you. As I said, PSHDL is, well, I didn't say that actually. PSHDL is part of my bachelor, my PhD thesis. They're not so different. I've been working on it for quite a few years. It has bugs. I know that. So if you encounter any of those, I would kindly ask you to report it. And what I really want to bring to you as a message is that programming FPGAs doesn't need to be hard. It's just the tooling that sucks and the language. And but the hardware is okay. I really want to bring to you the simplicity of being able to program FPGAs, and I would really be welcome. I would find it really nice if you could take a look at beta.pshdl.org, you know, test it, crash it, report it, and if you're interested in having a nice board that comes along with it, you can go to boards.pshdl.org and give me a hint on what the price for this board should be. And if you're interested in following me, whatever I'm doing with PSHDL, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus. I'm not actually on Google Plus, it's just I created an account there. And and you can read in the blog about what I'm up to if I have time to, which I didn't have in the last few months.
Questions? Microphone one, two.
So two questions. Question one, how do you deal with two and more clocks in a design?
Yes.
And how do you, and this is, can I set up the server at my home or?
Yes.
Okay. First one, a little bit more details, please.
Okay. So if you're doing something that is a little bit more serious than blinking LEDs and you have some privacy concerns, there is a command line version of PSHDL available that you can use. There is no need to run it on server. But the reason I'm not advertising it so much is because I know that most of you are lazy when it comes to reporting bugs. And when it's crashing on the server, I can actually see it and I can take care of it. And also, it's also ensured that this is the latest version of the compiler that you're using. So there is a command line version. The editor as the web GUI, I didn't make that open source yet. I'm not sure if I ever will, because I want to have a single I want to have a single place where everything is concentrated. Yeah, but there's no restriction there, and it's open source. So if you're unhappy with what I'm doing, just fork it.
Okay. So how stable is the language? So if I write code today, will it still run in 2 years, or do you think you will still add some synthetic changes?
I would say I might add features. Small syntactic sugar features that increase the readability, but as of now, I didn't make any changes in the last year or so, or even more. So I think that with what I have from a language perspective is quite stable and well suited for its tasks. So there are no tasks that where it seemed like I need to have some language different language construct for that.
Your approach is to make it easier for programmers to write FPGA stuff, but there's a difference in thinking, as you know, as you don't write. If you write code for VHDL, you don't write code but behavior. And while Verilog looks like C, and for VHDL looks like I say Pascal, you say Ada, it's totally different. I'm not sure if another language should not be like, let's say, the behave stuff more describe or help the people to see that it's a behavior. And with you, it looks like C code, but it's not code. If it's a loop, it's you cannot transfer a loop from whatever programming language to VHDL, Verilog, or even yours.
Yes.
And this makes the people, they must think different, and this is not really supported. It's, now you say, okay, it's the register idea is great, so it looks more, it's less complicated, and so on.
Yeah, so this is true. The language looks cleaner, but it is not C. It is a parallel language that in the end translates to a process-oriented language like VHDL and Verilog. This implies that you have to wrap your head around the new paradigm that it introduces. And this is like when you're coming from from C and you want to learn functional programming, you need to wrap your brain around that as well. And PSHDL will not solve that for you. It doesn't do anything magic with the for loops. It's a new paradigm, but at least the language is not, the tooling is significantly better. I have cold folding in my editor, which is something that you cannot say about most editors in the Xilinx tools. And it has much better tooling and hopefully better usability overall, which should ease the learning curve significantly.
A question from the internet.
Okay, I've got a small question here. Someone was asking whether there will be PDF renderings of your slides available, because they were kind of hard to read on the high quality streams as well.
Yeah, they will be available. I just finished them like 5 minutes before the presentation, so I didn't have time to upload them yet, but they will be in the next release of the Fahrplan then, I guess.
Okay, and an actual technical question. Are there any proof of concepts for larger scale projects, and what is your adaption for runtime dynamic assertions?
Runtime dynamic assertions? I have no idea what he means by that. But for the first question, I can tell you that. So I was using one of the bigger codes that was writing, that actually a student of mine was writing, and he was doing that in the HTML editor. Was the discrete wavelet transformation, which is like 2,500 lines of PSHDL code. It doesn't sound like a huge project, but if you would think of 2,500 lines of assembler, then you would think, like, okay, this is maybe a bit harder to do. And so the lines of code can be seen like this, which results in like 7,500 lines of VHDL code. And from a mental perspective, this was very challenging to do, because you had to do the timing right and stuff like this. But I don't see that. I don't see that PSHDL would fail for a certain size of project, because in the end, you can always instantiate VHDL code or Verilog modules. You're just losing the ability to simulate them as fast as you can with PSHDL.
Okay, back to microphone two.
I have a small clarification regarding the runtime dynamic assertion. He meant checking setup and holding times.
No, I'm not doing timing. If your design is not meeting the timing requirements, then this is something that you will get told in the synthesis step. This is not something I'm looking into, at least right now.
Right, thank you. What are your thoughts regarding code reuse, such as some kind of standard library or including existing code snippets?
Well, you can use, you can instantiate VHDL modules or Verilog modules. All you have to do is you're just declaring an interface where it says, which is like a component declaration in VHDL, where you're saying you have this port, this port, this port, and then you can use it.
And for PSHDL code then? Say I write some kind of a module to process an image and I want to share it with people. Are there any mechanisms for including that in an easy way?
Not right now, no. You would have to pull in the sources.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Hello, since you made such a nice comparison destroying all the traditional competition, I wonder whether you also compared to Lava or BlueSpec, so that you can destroy all the industrial solutions.
Is Lava really a destroy? Okay. I didn't do that. Sorry. But it would be interesting to do.
Yeah. Back to the questions from the internet.
Another listener at home found it difficult and time-consuming to handle multiple hardware cores and special bootloaders for each core. Is there a simple method implementing something like a stage 2 El Torito boot system?
What is he talking about? Maybe he got the window open for a different talk that is running in parallel?
That's what he said. I already asked him for clarification, but that's it. We could switch to a different one. How accurate is the generated VHDL code? For instance, my HDL produces sometimes false VHDL code, which is very annoying.
PSHDL always produces perfect code. No, this. What I think when I'm. I created the Verilog output module, and it's on Bitbucket already. But I was thinking like, okay, maybe this is a 1 week project. But then I realized that it's not, and I wasn't happy with the quality. So I really put a lot of emphasis into being sure that the code that is generated is behaving exactly the same way as the PSHDL code that you're describing, and I didn't have any reports that the VHDL code generated was incorrect compared to what you're describing in PSHDL. So, yeah, there is no formal proof that this is, even though I'm academic, that this is working. But I'm rather crashing the compiler than generating anything that is wrong.
Back to microphone two.
Okay, so if you have done a lot of stuff with Verilog and have looked into VHDL, would you still suggest to have a look at PSHDL? And just because I'm lazy, use PSHDL, or is there any major, improvement for me? It looks like maybe my development would be quicker because I need less code, but. Like, if I have done bigger projects in Verilog, is there any drawbacks in going to PSHDL?
No, there are really just more upsides. Can you do this, the demo, with VHDL?
No.
No. You see?
Okay.
So, so the advantage for the users that are already familiar with VHDL or Verilog is you're getting a significant speed up in simulation. And this leads to a quicker turnaround time. And also, what I find very, very important and is that the simulation, the VHDL code that's generated, is behaving in a simulation the same way as in the hardware. This is something that I really put an emphasis on. And this is not always always easy. And especially in Verilog, I found it to be very difficult to actually do that. But maybe that's because I suck at Verilog. I think there are fair advantages to using PCHDL in a professional environment. And especially when you're, for example, when you're running the discrete wavelet transformation embedded into the OpenJPEG core, it takes to execute the OpenJPEG with the embedded PCHDL simulated wavelet transformation takes 6 seconds. And if you run it in, if you run a picture through OpenJPEG with the wavelet transformation in a VHDL simulation, it not just takes 2.5 gigabytes of your valuable RAM, or 12.5 gigabytes if you're coding the memory a bit wrong. It also takes a factor of 1,200 times longer. So, by the way, the simulation takes in PSHDL takes 20 megabytes. For the OpenJPEG. So I think those are really significant speed ups. And also you can embed your own configuration languages. And it has very many extension points that you can hook into to do what is not right now supported right now. So I think it's fair.
Okay. So do you still think it's helpful to know Verilog or VHDL? As mentioned before, now it looks like a programming language, not like a hardware description language anymore?
It definitely helps, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is, what is your time frame for the boards? Like, and by what is it governed? And the second question, part of what makes Arduino so successful is that people don't have to know so much about the hardware anymore. Like, if I want to use SPI on an Arduino, I don't have to know which registers to shift which bits in. So is there going to be something like a standard library that that like an IP core, say for UART, I2C, whatever, that I can simply add to my PSHDL project?
Yeah, this is really where I'm calling out to you. I really want you to use PSHDL and create those cores. And I want to add some collaboration way to it, where you can have modules pulled into. So this would be really the ultimate goal of doing that. Right now, I don't have it, and I'm very sad about it. But I really would love to have it.
And for the boards?
Pardon?
For the boards, like?
Oh, the board. Okay, so the time frame is that we have a almost working prototype here, and I'm really. So the idea is I want to make an Indiegogo campaign and want to get a bigger number of people to produce the board with, so that they can get the prize that. At around 30 euros, which I think is a really neat price. And so for that, if you're subscribing to the board thingy there, the link that I was mentioning, then you will be notified when the campaign goes up. And I really hope to be able to put it up in January, so that it's running through in February, so that in March, April kind of thing, you will maybe get a board.
Awesome. Thanks for the great work.
Back to the questions from the internet.
Another question is, was there any specific reason behind designing a new language instead of going for something like Pythonic MyHDL or Python in general?
Verilog, VHDL, and MyHDL are both, or those three are process-oriented languages, and they work by describing something. You know, if you want to have a register, you say something, this should be a register, and no, you're not saying a register, but you're saying like, if rising edge there, then do this, then do that, and so on. And when I was starting my PhD thesis, I want to have an easy way to pass source code and make sense out of it. And so this was the original motivation to create PSHDL, to have some sane way of making sense of the input source. And then I realized that actually this language is much simpler and nicer, and so I thought maybe do something for the better of the community that are interested in programming FPGAs.
There's also another suggestion coming in from the net. Since you mentioned pushing down the price point of your boards, someone was wondering why you were using an XMiga, which costs around €3 a piece, while you could also get an ARMS microcontroller for around a third of the price.
Yeah, it's because I know the XMigas, and I know that that creating that you have to put on the programming logic on the XMiga, and then it was possible to do, and that's just the way it went. And I really liked Atmels, so I took this one. Maybe I could save €1 or two if I used another one, but I wouldn't be familiar with it, and then you have the cost of not being familiar with it, which you have to consider as well. Also, I like that you have some kind of other I/O capabilities with the XMiga.
Okay, I'm going to cut the Q&A short because we're going over time, but a big applause for Karsten.